It's rolling.
Recording on the snowball?
Yep.
There it is. It's a beautiful, beautiful light.
On the blue ball.
Blue ball. Childish.
We are monsters. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's the podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me as always is Max. Max, how are you?
Can you describe my outfit?
It's a nice kind of, I want to say flannel, but I think flannel necessitates a plaid pattern.
It's a Gap wool shirt.
Yeah, it looks pretty comfy. It's pretty stylish. Your hair is very swooped and orderly, and you got your typical kind of trendy, stylish Maxwell McKenna look.
Sure.
With your pepperoni pizza print joggers.
Yeah.
How did you get those joggers? Didn't you win them?
I won them. I won these in a contest where I thought I was winning a year of free pizza, and instead they gave me graphic joggers, which are terrible. I hate them. They're my sick pants.
I'm glad you're not sick anymore.
Not anymore.
I'm glad that you're getting over the strep. Shout out to all of you who are taking this weather change kind of rough. Everybody's getting sick around me. And here I am dodging the mucus bullets. I haven't gotten sick yet, but...
Lucky duck.
Knock on wood that it doesn't happen.
How you feeling after that Cannibal Corpse show?
Pretty good. I'm kind of pissed. I missed the opener because...
Harm's Way?
Yeah, I missed Harm's Way.
The early line, gig, right?
Yeah, super early show, which I really appreciate early shows.
Hell yeah.
Especially because I'm an old man now, yeah. And I work on Monday morning, and it was a Sunday night show, so I appreciate it. But I was standing in line, and by the time we got in, they were done playing.
Really?
I don't understand the physics of what happened, but yeah, they were done.
Weird.
So I just... went up to the merch table and bought some stuff and said, hey, I wish I saw your band. You guys fucking rock, to their singer. But yeah, they're doing a European tour, and hopefully someday they'll come back and do a headlining tour.
Yeah.
Or at least one where I can actually see Harm's Way play songs. But
yeah,
it is what it is. It's fucking bullshit. Cannibal Corpse was awesome, though. It was a childhood dream come true.
I'm very glad you're able to do that.
And Corpse Grinder's neck is absolutely as thick in person as it is
great
in photos.
Thank you for being our correspondent.
It's thicker. It's even thicker than you could possibly comprehend.
Did you finish Hill House? Hill House good?
I did. It's fantastic. Did you watch it?
I did. I finished it Friday.
Oh, okay.
Katrina and I did.
Thoughts?
I liked it up until the last, 30 minutes. The more I think about it.
Yeah, of the kind of tying everything together neatly and...
Yeah, maybe we should pre-dub Media Corner it at some point.
Yeah.
But...
The book club? Get the book club together?
Get the book club together. We could read the Shirley Jackson book.
Oh.
But I didn't have a problem with how much stuff was left unresolved. My issue was the tone shift.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see
that. Try not to give too much away.
I know, it's hard to talk about the ending of a show without spoiling anything. So
yeah.
Maybe we should pivot out and talk about the topic of the day. So Max always... puts together some research for us on a topic about death. What do you have for us today?
So today, we're going to be going on a little field trip for the episode. As you mentioned, we got the temperature change. It's getting pretty cold here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We jumped right over fall. There was no fall. There was no autumn. It's all winter.
You get about an hour of autumn in Ohio.
It's garbage. So I figured, what could be better right now than taking a trip to someplace nice and warm?
Ooh.
So we're going to be heading out to the Middle East to look at a couple really cool death traditions and customs. But first, we should prepare for the heat by hydrating with a nice, refreshing pre-Dead Boys Kraken in the Topic moment. Brought to you again by Waterloo Sparkling Water.
Waterloo! I listened to that song.
Oh yeah, you like it? It's my favorite ABBA song.
I know what you're talking about now, and I see the appeal.
Yeah.
I don't like ABBA very much, but that's just me. I got all the musical hot takes today. I hate the Beatles. I hate ABBA. Whatever you like, if it's not Cannibal Corpse, I don't want to listen to it. No, but Waterloo's delicious.
Yeah. So let's go to the Middle East. So this was fun because I checked the temperature before we did this.
Yeah.
Like the temperature over in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
What temperature do you think it is in Afghanistan right now?
93.
We are both products of the American public education school system. It's like low to mid 60s, like highs are the low to mid 60s. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's... I feel like I still treat geography as like how sci-fi treats different planets and galaxies. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, this is the desert planet where it's a desert and it's hot all the time.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's the desert part of the world where it's 90 degrees all the time. And it's not. It's winter there.
That's a good way of describing it. I definitely approach truth like science fiction.
Yeah. It was really goofy. I was like, oh, there's no other way around it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yikes. So we're going to be going big or going home with some very deathy stuff today.
Mm-hmm.
So first, let's hearken back to our very first episode.
Oh.
Our nascent infancy.
Yeah.
We're going to do something a little sky burial adjacent and take a look at Towers of Silence.
Yes.
Dorian, do you know what these are? You yesed.
You briefly explained to me what they were, and I guess I'll leave it to you to explain so I don't totally butcher it.
Yeah, but I'm glad that you know what they are, because they're pretty rad. For those of you who don't know, a Tower of Silence is the English language term for a dogma. A dogma is a raised circular platform used in Zoroastrian... God, I wrote this word so many fucking times, and it does...
Zoroastrian, I think. Yeah. It's a real doozy. You made me read that at one point, and I hated you for it. But I let go of it, and I forgave you. But now I hate you getting... No, I'm just kidding.
Zoroastrianism.
Okay.
Nice.
I wrote it too many times, and it's like when you write a word, and it just doesn't look real anymore.
Yeah.
So a dogma is a raised circular platform used in A dogma is a raised circular platform used in Zoroastrian religious tradition for the purpose of excarnation. A lot of big words there. Let me get one more go. A dogma is a raised circular platform used in Zoroastrian religious tradition for the purpose of excarnation. I mentioned sky burials earlier, which is also a form of excarnation. So, excarnation, therefore... You guess?
The opposite of incarnation?
Yeah, it's the process of removing all of the flesh from a corpse.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So in sky burials, you talk about how they take bodies and they lay them on the hillside and a bunch of vultures come down and they just pick the flesh from the bones. It's a similar thing here. However, before we start talking about excarnation and describing how the process of a Tower of Silence works, we should explore the religion of Zoroastrianism a bit. It sounds really foreign to us in the West today, but these people have been around for a while.
Zoroastrianism is one of the world's oldest monotheistic religions. It was founded by the prophet Zoroaster in ancient Iran approximately 3,500 years ago. Arguably the world's first monotheistic faith, it's one of the oldest religions still in existence. For 1,000 years, Zoroastrianism was one of the most powerful religions in the world. It was the official religion of Persia from 600 BCE to 650 CE, over 1,200 years.
Now, Zoroastrianism is not super common today. In fact, the United States actually has the world's third largest population of practicing Zoroastrians. According to a 2006 New York Times article, however, there are only about 11,000 of them in the United States, with the population mostly being concentrated in Iran and nearby countries. Hmm. However, I bet you have heard of one famous Zoroastrian. You know Farouk Bulsara?
I've heard the name, I think.
Yeah?
Who is that?
He's the most famous practitioner of the religion. He's a musician who fronted Queen.
Oh, fuck. It's Freddie.
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury. Yeah.
Farouk Bulsara was Freddie Mercury's birth name, and he was raised as a Zoroastrian.
Huh.
So, anyway, coming back from Queen, there's a reason dogmas have been prominent in Zoroastrian culture throughout the millennia. I know that we both have spiritual beliefs where the soul is very important.
Right.
Our actual physical bodies, while important here, however, are not really important once the soul leaves the body after death. So that's why I don't feel particularly weird about cremation or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like, yeah, once the soul's gone, it's just a vessel.
Right. It's a shell.
It's a shell.
It's a skin you shed like a snake.
Maybe a big slug can live in it, wherever a mollusk does. I don't know.
Getting back into Juji Ito territory.
Yeah. Zoroastrians, however, have a pretty different belief in this area.
According to the Zoroastrian tradition, after the death of the body, the soul remains in the world for 3 days and nights in the care of Shrashua, one of the angels. During this period, prayers are said and rituals performed to assure a safe passage of the soul into the spiritual realm. On the dawn of the fourth day, the spirit is believed to have crossed over to the other world. Meanwhile, on Earth, the body is considered unclean because corpse demons immediately flood into the body and contaminate what they come into contact with. Because of this, and because Zoroastrianism places great emphasis on purity and not defiling any of the elements of God's creation, traditionally, neither burial nor cremation were practiced by Zoroastrians. Instead, dead bodies are taken to a tower of silence and laid out under the sun, where vultures pick the bodies clean and prevent the corpse demons from contaminating soil, water, and air.
There's a free band name right there. Corpse Demon.
I thought you were going to say soil, water, air. I don't know.
It's like earth, wind, fire,
yeah.
Basically. So basically, after death, in the Zoroastrian tradition, there is a need to keep the dead body away from living things. Because, again, demons have flooded into the body in the absence of the soul. So cremating the body would release those demons into the air and contaminate the air. Burying the body would allow them to leach into the soil and contaminate the soil.
Hmm.
So not great.
Yeah.
But if you look at vultures, vultures are able to consume dead bodies without suffering any ill effects. So therefore, in their logic and tradition, they figure that vultures must be able to somehow process or exorcise these demons from the body.
So in the way that we might, you know, eat a yogurt to kind of get those good probiotics going,
yeah,
on, get the good bacteria. Vultures have some kind of demon probiotic that they can just digest evil stuff.
Yeah, it breaks it down.
Yeah, okay. And it's actually good for them.
Yeah.
All right, nice.
So they survive. Now that we have the reasoning out of the way, let's get into the actual physical description of a dogma, because they're pretty cool structures.
In the Iranian Zoroastrian tradition, the towers were built atop hills or low mountains in desert locations distant from population centers. The towers, which are fairly uniform in their construction, have a circular roof where bodies were placed, with the outer edge being slightly higher than the interior. The roof is divided into three concentric rings. The bodies of men are arranged around the outer ring, women in the second circle, and children in the innermost ring. Once the bones have been picked clean and bleached by the sun and wind, which can take as long as a year, they are collected in an ossuary pit at the center of the tower, where they gradually disintegrate. The remaining material runs through multiple coal and sand filters before being eventually washed into the ground. The ritual area on the first floor may be entered only by a special class of pallbearers, called Nucesilars, who must ritually clean themselves after.
Hell yeah. Holy shit. Good work.
Nucesilars.
Nucesilars. So basically these bodies are taken from the home where you would die, and they're placed on the roof of just kind of a large circular building. And the building is kind of tilted in, so it's pitched down towards the center. So that way, when a vulture would descend and kind of eat something from the top ring, it would knock bones down, and the bones would just kind of all eventually fall and collect in the center, where they get crushed up and eventually leach back into the earth. So the whole process is designed to be as minimally intrusive as possible by human hands. All people have to do is take the actual bodies and lay them on the roof of the Tower of Silence.
Okay.
If you want to see some photos, here's some here. Now, this first one is kind of the ruins of one in Iraq. You can see how massive the structure is.
Right. So the roof is no longer on here. It was some kind of material that disintegrated and it's gone now.
Of this one, yeah. Because you would normally walk in a door and then they would be prepared on the covered first floor. And then you would walk up a flight of stairs onto the roof where you would lay them so that they were easily accessible by all the vultures.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're just regular vultures. They can't, like, come inside or anything.
Sure.
So you got to leave them on the roof.
Yeah. They are cold, too. Bring them inside.
Yeah, he's in the car. He's listening to his favorite music.
This is massive. How big around is this? Do you know?
I couldn't find dimensions of this one. But if you look at the height of that door, that's about 10 feet. So the structure itself is probably like 75 to 80 feet in diameter.
Okay.
Which means if you're laying bodies shoulder to shoulder, you can fit a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
You can also look in the background of this photo and you can see the city in the distance. And you can see just how far away from the city that these buildings were placed.
Right. Away from the population centers.
Yeah. Because again, you don't want the demons and the contamination from the body hurting people who are still alive.
Right.
Now, because this is obviously a sacred place for this religion, we don't really have photographs of what they look like when vultures are picking the bones dry. But there is an artist's rendition of what it looks like here.
Are they slotted in? Like, is the inside of the structure, do they have little sections to put the bodies in? Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. Little divots so that they don't just roll down
right
while still covered in flesh.
Yeah, they're kind of in place and stay there for a minute.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. It kind of looks like the you ever go on that fair ride where you go inside the spaceship and it twirls around really, really,
yeah,
really
fast?
Yeah,
you pin, the floor drops down?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like in there.
It does, actually.
So now I'm just thinking about bodies spinning really, really rapidly and flying everywhere.
Yeah. But you can see in this artist's rendition, just vultures sitting around.
Ooh, they're waiting.
Yeah. Because this is just free food to them.
Right.
People die, and this religion was so large and had so many adherents that these things were kept stocked year-round, you know?
Right. And I wonder, too, just seeing all of them perched up like that, I wonder if vultures just kind of know when they can charge in and take the bodies. I remember from that sky burial footage that they were very patient, and despite being very, very large, vicious looking birds, they did not go anywhere near the live humans. They just patiently waited for the dead bodies to be available.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, Dakma, they were found all throughout places where the Zoroastrian religion spread, which is large portions of the Middle East and good parts of Asia as well. A lot of them have been destroyed over the years, though. You know, they're made of relatively weak materials because they're not places of honor exactly. As Zoroastrianism lost more and more practitioners and more of a cultural foothold, those who still followed it were unable to prevent expanding cities from tearing down the Dakma for sanitary reasons. You know, if you don't believe what these people do, you would look at this and just be like, so you guys just take a bunch of dead people and you leave them in a building, gross birds fly down, and they eat all the flesh and they poop everywhere, and then the bones just roll into a big pit.
Okay, yeah, tight. We're going to go ahead and bulldoze that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because we look at a body and we just go, oh, that should be buried or something because it's just it's gross, but you don't need to like never look at it again or keep it in a big building.
Like, look, we know food tastes good inside of your mouth, but we don't want to see you chewing it.
Yeah.
Get it out of here.
That's kind of what this big body pit in the middle is doing, is just housing all the decomposing bodies.
It is not dissimilar to a Sarlacc pit.
That's true. It's kind of like a big Sarlacc pit.
It eats dead bodies.
Vultures. All that being said, there is a prominent Dakma in the megacity of Mumbai, India, which has a population of over 12 million.
Whew.
Zoroastrianism has remained on in the city, and, you know, because of having a basic respect for this people's religious tradition, they're not tearing it down, and they're still allowing people to be buried there. But the following is an excerpt from a Guardian article that focuses on the problems of operating a Tower of Silence in the modern world.
The current rate for land on Mumbai's Malabar Hill is over $1,000 a square foot. But 54 acres of the hill's crest is not available for any money. Here, shrouded in mystique and ancient trees, the Towers of Silence, or Dakma, repose in their 300-year-old Dungarwadi, the garden on the hill. Here, the city's once definitive, now dwindling Parsi community continues with its 3,000-year-old Zoroastrian tradition of disposing of the dead body by exposing it to scavenger birds. The practice survived in pockets of Iran, but Iran's dakmas were declared a health hazard and illegal in the 1970s because urbanization had marched upon these once desolate sky burial sites. Mumbai's Dungarwadi broods on, despite its luxe location, but the towers are now far from silent. India's vulture population has seen a steady decline due to habitat destruction caused by urbanization, but it evaporated thanks to a livestock drug developed in the early 1990s. It proved toxic for the vultures feeding on bovine carcasses. The drug was banned in May 2006, but by then, it had decimated 95% of these birds.
So, the big issue with Towers of Silence today is that vulture populations across the globe are dropping. When we pollute animals with drugs and antibiotics and all kinds of chemicals, scavenger animals that feed on livestock corpses can see their populations almost erased.
Hmm.
You know, when you have like an amount of drug that exists in a cow's body, that might not hurt the cow, but a bird who's eating parts of three different cows might get a pretty bad mixture of those drugs and would die, you
right.
know? Think about how dangerous DDT was here in America. It was that chemical that we used to kill a bunch of mosquitoes, and what happened is that birds would eat the mosquitoes, and then they would lay eggs, and the eggs would have super thin eggshells, or their offspring would be deformed. And a lot of birds, specifically California condors, were really hurt by this chemical. So I'll summarize the middle part of the article here. The Zoroastrian community in Mumbai was really struggling. They can't touch bodies after death because of the rules of their religion, but also there weren't enough vultures to take care of the corpses after death. The bodies were just kind of sitting there rotting.
Gross.
Which is not what you want.
Right.
Especially in a super bougie neighborhood, when you look over and you're like, I paid $1,000 per square foot for my house, and I'm looking at that big stone structure, and it's just full of rotting corpses.
Get it out of here!
Get it out of here. But necessity is the mother of invention, and the Zoroastrian community discovered a fascinating way to take care of this problem.
The Towers of Silence in Mumbai have found an alternative in powerful solar concentrators which desiccate the corpse. Admittedly, not in the half hour that a hungry flock of vultures accomplished, but which still keep to the Zoroastrian injunction not to defile the elements. The solar panels converge light and heat at 230 degrees Fahrenheit on a corpse to quicken decomposition. Traditionalism is an aging community's security blanket, most of all in matters of the imminent afterlife. The Dakma is presented as the only way to dispose of a corpse for the true Zoroastrian. The strict rituals and prayers recited in the Dungarwadi guarantee the untroubled passage of the soul and help the living towards closure, even with the presence of modern technology.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, fry those bad boys.
Yeah. Whew. But, like, you know, if you are prevented from touching a body, but it needs to decompose somehow, this is a pretty good solution.
Yeah.
You dry the corpse out, and you basically reduce it to dust through heat, and then you just let it decompose naturally after that.
Right.
I imagine there might be some issues with, like, some corpses getting a little mummified or something, or if there's not a lot of sun, like if it's the rainy season in India, it might be trouble to get some of the sun. But it's a good solution for the problem that they're kind of stuck with right now.
Yeah. Interesting that it's a solution that uses modern technology to uphold a more than 3,000-year-old tradition, too. That those things are not necessarily contradictory to each other.
Yeah, like when you see this really, you know, culturally significant death tradition be able to be maintained instead of just being like, I guess we just have to bury people or cremate people now.
Right.
You know?
Not just giving it up as like, it's just what we did in the old days, but
yeah,
they don't have to sacrifice their culture and what they historically have done.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the New Orleans Jazz funeral, you know, where people are like, this is what we do and it's important to us. And even though New Orleans is a lot bigger and there's more traffic, we're still going to do it.
Yeah.
It's cool. So before we head to our second big topic of the episode, I wanted to talk a bit more about another Zoroastrian death ritual, the Sagdeed. Dorian, if you could, please read this selection from a sacred Zoroastrian text describing the Sagdeed ritual.
You shall therefore cause the yellow dog with four eyes, or the white dog with yellow ears, to go three times through the room containing the body. When either the yellow dog with four eyes or the white dog with yellow ears is brought there, then the corpse demon flies away to the regions of the north, in the shape of a raging fly, with knees and tail sticking out, all stained with stains, and like unto the foulest repulsive animal.
That's pretty cool.
What did I just read here? What is this?
It's the Sagdeed. The Sagdeed is a ritual that translates directly into dog sight.
Huh.
Which is pretty cool. So, unlike a lot of ancient Middle Eastern religions, in Zoroastrianism, dogs are considered to be highly intelligent and helpful animals. Good boys.
Very good boys.
This is very good. So, my girlfriend met my parents recently for the first time. And we went over to my parents' house for a nice dinner. It wasn't a great dinner, Mike. It was pizza, which is pretty cool.
That's a great dinner.
Yeah, it was pretty rad, actually.
Hell yeah.
But, you know, we're talking a lot about how dogs are helpful and they're smart. My parents have two dogs. They actually have three, but two of them are Great Pyrenees.
Yeah.
And they're each like 110 pounds. Like their head goes up to my waist.
Ugh.
And I'm a tall dude.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. They're big dogs, but they're also so stupid. And, you know, one of them, Matthew, was fine. Their names are Matthew and Piss Willie.
I fucking love good. Piss William.
He sucks, actually, though. Because Matthew was fine. Matthew warmed up to Katrina, no problem. He was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Piss William did not. He was kind of cowering the whole time. And at one point, I was like, I'm going to run to the bathroom really quick. I'll be right back. So I, like, go into the bathroom and, like, washing my hands after. And I just hear my parents outside. He's just barking.
Yeah.
My parents are yelling, oh, God, get the mop, get the mop. He's pooping everywhere. And I'm just, like, standing in the bathroom, losing my mind over how funny this image is of my, like, extremely patient and kind girlfriend standing next to two strangers.
Yeah.
That she's never met before. Well, they're huge dog.
It's just shits everywhere.
Shitting everywhere. My dad's like getting the mop and like wiping everything up.
Oh man.
It was so, oh my God.
Oh, Piss William.
He did a bad job that day. But, you know, unlike that incident, again, in Zoroastrianism, dogs are intelligent.
Yeah.
And they're well regarded and they're helpful. So when a four-eyed dog, that is actually just a yellow dog that has like brown dots above its eyes.
Oh, okay.
Which was a pretty common breed in the area at the time.
Okay.
Because they were like, oh, it's got four eyes, which help it see the soul better as it departs the body.
Mm.
So when that dog is brought before a body, they are thought to chase the corpse demons away. And... and then it flies away. What's it say? Stained with stains?
Stained with stains. Like Piss William.
Like Piss William.
When he shat all over, all over the house.
Like on counters and stuff. Sorry.
What?
He's big.
What a maniac.
And before modern medical technology as well, these dogs were also used to confirm death. You know, you want to make sure that before you take a body out to the Tower of Silence, it's not just in a coma.
Mm. Yeah.
So they thought that if you brought the dog in and the dog stared at the body, then the person would still be alive. Because the dog would recognize, like, well, that's a person. What's he going to, he's going to like play fetch? You know?
Yeah.
And if the dog doesn't look at the body, then the death of the person was confirmed. I don't know what their success rate is.
Yeah, interesting.
But if they were doing an okay job at this, then they must have been pretty good boys.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I know we have some animal lovers who listen to this pod. I wonder if they can smell something, or dogs just have a way of detecting a lot of things, a lot of subtleties that we absolutely can't through smell and other things.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they can tell.
Yeah.
If you have any kind of insight into how accurate a dog can predict if someone's dead,
please
let us know.
Yeah.
We want to know just how good these boys are.
Like, I wonder if this particular breed of dog with the spots above its eyes,
yeah,
if they had like a, I don't know, attuned sense of smell.
They were nostrils on the top. He had extra good smells.
Yeah, he had like scent receptors. So let's head to our next destination. Remember last episode when we talked about the London Necropolis and how big that was?
Yeah.
Right now, we're going to do it one better, and we're going to head to the world's largest cemetery, Wadi Us-Salam in Najif, Iraq. According to the UNESCO World Heritage website, the cemetery takes up 13% of the area of the city itself and covers 3.5 square miles.
Holy shit.
It's big.
That is wild.
Like, the town I grew up in was a decent size, and it takes a while to drive through, and it's like 1.2 square miles.
Yeah.
This is huge. Over 5 million Muslims are buried there, and there are approximately 500,000 new bodies currently being interred there every year.
500,000.
500,000.
Every year.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Look at this place. Here's some photos.
Wow. So there's a lot of structures here. Are these all mausoleums?
Yeah, all crypts. Yep.
Wow. It just keeps going as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. You can't even really capture it in one photo because it's sprawling.
Right.
You know, here in America, a lot of our cemeteries are covered in, you know, green space. And it's almost like a park. This is almost entirely brown. Almost every inch of ground is covered by crypts, mausoleums, memorials. There's one big road that runs through the middle. But after that, you're walking on top of things. You're climbing over things. You're going through a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
The best approximation that we really have is cemeteries in New Orleans, where you can't really bury bodies because the ground is too wet.
Right.
And they don't stay buried.
And so they have all of the tombs that are above, or the what were they called? Above ground coffins? Or...
Yeah, the coffin walls.
Coffin walls, yeah.
Yeah. It's just crypts and crypts and walls as far as the eye can see. Undertakers at the cemetery say that an individual crypt commonly holds up to 50 bodies. Like, one family tomb will just have 50 bodies stacked in it. Over 200 burials a day take place at the cemetery, with individuals being flown in from all over the world. The town actually has an airport, and most of that airport's traffic is just planes being flown in that are full of coffins, shipped in from America, from overseas, from all over.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So here's a description of some common rituals and beliefs surrounding the cemetery.
The graveyard holds importance in Muslim belief, as it has been said that the souls of all faithful men and women shall eventually be moved to Wadi Us Salam, no matter where their bodies are buried. Some rituals carried out before burial in the cemetery include the body being washed and wrapped at the cemetery, funeral prayers conducted inside the Imam Ali shrine, the deceased being carried around the shrine 3 times, and some Quranic verses which are recited at the cemetery.
So just the amount that it takes for one body to be prepared, times 200 to 300 burials taking place there a day, this cemetery is often more busy than the neighboring town during the day. It takes a massive infrastructure of clergy, body preparers, you know, people carting around bodies. It takes a huge workforce to keep this thing maintained and running. So a lot of people who live in that town just work at the cemetery. You know, it's almost self-sustaining.
Right.
And I guess if the belief is that all bodies and all souls of Muslims will eventually go to this cemetery and congregate there, you might as well just be buried there anyway.
Right.
You know? However, due to recent violent upheavals in Iraq, Wadi Us Salam has become a hotbed of violent ISIS and militia activity.
In recent years, there has been an increased military presence in the area due to the frequent violence that has occurred at the site. During the 2003 invasion of Iraq, armed fighters of the Iraqi rebel factions frequently used the cemetery to hide and ambush approaching enemy units. Since it is full of winding lanes and underground mausoleums, the U.S. Army could not take control of the area. When the rebels took refuge in the narrow spaces among the crowded tombs, the Iraqi army ruthlessly bulldozed its way through the graves. To this day, piles of wrecked cages from the graves remain stacked along the roadsides. The violence that has overwhelmed Iraq ever since 2003 and the resulting high death toll has led to a massive expansion of the graveyard, swelling by 40%. As of 2014, coinciding with the conflict with ISIS, it has been reported that burial plots are running out, resulting in many being stolen, illegally resold, or improvised. As a result, costs of burial plots are rising, with a standard family plot costing about $4,100. This is double the price paid before violence in Iraq escalated in 2014.
Yeah, so this is a real shame.
You know?
It's sad to see this massive and beautiful piece of Middle Eastern history basically turn into like a Call of Duty map.
Right.
And you can look at these photos and see just how tough it would be to get anything through there. And if people are shooting at you while you're trying to do it, you're not going to be able to flush everything out of there. And 3.5 square miles?
Right.
It's a lot of space to secure every little bit of. But again, if you look at photos of this, the beauty of the site really can't be understated.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really cool. A really incredible feat of like engineering.
Yeah.
And this town kind of coming together to create this necropolis. I was like, I wonder, so like 5 million is one of those numbers that's, it's not a real number. You know, I'll never have 5 million anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's mind-boggling to think that the only U.S. city that has more living people than are buried in Wadi Us Salam is New York City. Like, there's more dead people in this than are in Los Angeles.
More dead people in Wadi Us Salam than living people in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I think Columbus, I think we're at like a little less than 1 million. So like 5 Columbuses is crazy.
Yeah. So do you think that they'll just continue to expand, or will there be a breaking point where there just won't be any more room in Wadi Us Salam?
Well, that's kind of what's happening now. Is now that air travel is much more accessible. Like, you know, let's say you're from Iraq and you move to Texas. You die. It's easier to be flown back to Wadi Us Salam to be buried there.
Right.
That's why we're seeing that 500,000 people be buried there a year. And so what's happening is, you know, unscrupulous people are moving into this area and they'll see a mausoleum that looks old. It looks like people aren't visiting it. And they'll just knock it down. They'll just bulldoze it with like sledgehammers and then sell the space to a new family that moves in. And just let them build on the space.
Hmm.
So it's actually really tough to tell when it's going to reach the breaking point, because it just keeps going up, you know?
Yeah.
People are building mausoleums on top of mausoleums. People are knocking down old ones. It's almost like a little free-for-all in there.
Right. It's out of control.
Yeah. I don't know what the government of Iraq is going to have to do about it, but it is a really beautiful place, and it'd be, I imagine, kind of jarring to walk through the 3.5 square miles of bodies.
Right.
See everything.
Do we know how stable it is in terms of international conflict right now? I mean, I know the American invasion in Iraq is over, but is this a stable... I mean, I would be surprised if we could just visit.
Yeah. From what I've read, ISIS doesn't have any qualms about going in there and just shooting rockets out of it.
Yeah.
Because they don't care. I don't even think that they particularly adhere to a lot of Muslim burial traditions or anything like that.
Okay.
So, you know, a standard Muslim burial, I don't think they do cremation or anything like that because they need the whole body to be there.
Yeah.
But ISIS just kind of walks in and they're like, whatever, and they'll just shoot rockets off of stuff. So they're kind of camped out in there now. And I think there's efforts to flush them out. But again, it's a lot of land and it's a labyrinth.
Right.
To keep that whole thing secure and safe. It's got to be difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we won't be going there anytime soon.
It'd be cool to see.
Yeah. But hopefully one day it, you know, gets restored to what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Be cool.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Max.
Yeah,
this is very interesting. A lot of stuff that I don't know much about, too. Admittedly, I'm very naive when it comes to Middle Eastern culture in general. But it's cool to take the time to kind of look at something like this.
Yeah, so we got some death towers. We got some sprawling necropolises.
Yeah.
Some dogs.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yep, we got some good pooches.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for listening. We want to hear what you guys think. Talk to us. We're at PreDeadBoys on Instagram and Twitter. PreDeadBoys@gmail.com is where you can email us with any thoughts, comments, questions, episode suggestions.
Dog info.
Anything like that. If you want to support the podcast, best way to do it is just tell your friends. Tell your friends about this very good show that Max works very hard on researching. And I work very hard at...
editing?
Listening.
You do not.
Yeah.
Nobody says bad things about my co-host.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Will you tell all your friends?
You've got your gun to my head.
Yeah, that was a Taking Back Sunday reference.
Hell yeah.
Anyway, yeah, tell people about this podcast. We really appreciate the word of mouth stuff that's been going on. Another good way you can support the podcast, you can tip us $3 at ko-fi.com/3deadboys.
Three dead boys.
Nope. /predeadboys. That helps us pay off hosting fees and stuff like that. You can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. We got a review.
Ah, cool.
Don't be alarmed. It's a good one. It's 5 stars.
I wonder, do you think... I'm going to lean in to whisper this. We record in my bedroom, and the walls are very thin. And I like to think sometimes that my neighbor gets kind of a fun preview of what the next episode is. And I wonder if this is from her.
I don't know.
It's probably not.
There's no way to know for sure, because this is a very mysterious review. This is from Rotten LaCroix.
Ah, no.
The the review is titled, "We Gonna Rot." I have been upset for a couple of days.
Oh.
Boo. But your podcast made my day. Thank you so much. You guys are hilarious, and I love this. You gonna rot. That's true. I'm gonna rot. Max, you're gonna rot. And Rotten LaCroix... sounds like you already rot.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the
That's
positive
very cool.
feedback.
Yeah, thank you.
We really appreciate it. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Look them up at bratcurse.bandcamp.com and keep an eye out for some of the new music they got coming out.
Tunes.
And that's
tunes.
Tunes.
Games.
Games?
Oh. Homestar Runner.
Oh. Yeah. It took me a second.
Tunes.
Tunes. Games. Is that... website still up?
Yes.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. When are we going to do a pre-Dead Boys episode about Homestar Runner and how they handle death?
Do they? ever?
No, probably not. What if they did, though? That'd be kind of a savage turn that I was not expecting.
I'm going to Google.
Yeah, you didn't see the episode where Strong Bad died?
Homestar Runner.
And they had to bury him?
Death. Oh, here's an entry on the Homestar Runner wiki. Death. There are numerous references to the subject of death.
Wow.
This is a long episode.
That's a long list of deaths. Are we going
to... We're going to have to go to town on this.
Is this going to be a Pre-Dead Boys book club? The wiki about death in Homestar Runner?
Who's Charlemagne?
The god?
Charlemagne the god. Oh, it's Strong Sad's plant. Good lord. Nerds.
We've got a lot of pop culture to unpack.
Yeah.
And a lot of research to do. Our job is never finished here at Pre-Dead Boys headquarters.
Yeah.
We're going to get to work. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot. Childish humor.
Go ahead. Phlegm out all that drainage.
Drainage!
Expectorant.
Eli, you boy!
Set up!
Stop your crying, you sniveling ass! Stop your nonsense!
Is that Red Dead or,
There Will Be Blood?
Okay. I don't know. He got knighted today. Did you see that?
Daniel Day?
Or not Daniel Day, Ed Hardy. Who I was confusing with Daniel Day-Lewis right there for some reason. Whoops.
Ed Hardy? Like the shirt guy?
Tom Hardy. Good lord.
Oh, shit.
Tom Hardy's not in There Will Be Blood.
Nope. He's in Venom, which is basically the same thing, right?
From what I heard, yeah. Do you think if we go to war with England, like, we're going to have to fight against, like, Paul McCartney and Elton John and Mick Jagger, who are like leading the British Army.
I like my odds against Paul McCartney.
Oh, did you hear his really Nasty Boy song, though?
His Nasty Boy song?
Yeah.
Pull it up.
Oh, Fu You is what it's called.
Cute.
Sucks ass. Dude, Paul McCartney did Imagine Dragons.
This is real?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And it's like, come on, Paul.
How old is he now?
Old.
Way too old.
This song is called Hunt You Down / Naked / Sea Link.
You know how we ended our last recording session talking about train? And then that put me in a really bad mood? Well, this just Paul started me really in a bad mood. Trash. Bullshit. You know my feelings on the Beatles. I hate the Beatles. I feel like they're the most overrated.
I didn't know that.
I really despise the Beatles. I used to just kind of be like, oh yeah, they're influential or whatever, that's fine. But they've really grated on me.
Yeah, I don't like them either. It's pop rock that people lose their minds over for no reason.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm sharing that with you, and I thought it was going to be a real hot take, but nope. I feel like I'm in a safe space with you.
Yeah.
Where we can come
completely serious.
Agree.
Overrated.
Beatles, overrated.
Paul McCartney's current album?
The Pre-Dead Boys.
Sucks.
Paul won't say fuck. I will.
Yeah,
fuck the Beatles.
Follow the Beatles.
Follow the Beatles.
Follow the Beatles.
You turds.
Imagine Dragons ass, old dude.